By coin toss, Congressman Murphy, you have the first opening statement tonight.
All right, well, thank you very much, and good evening. Thank you for being here this evening. I decided to get involved in public service because I was tired of the name-calling, the finger-pointing and bickering. And I'm proud of what I've accomplished over the past 4 years in Washington. One of my greatest achievements was working with Republicans and Democrats to help authorize nearly $2 billion of funding for the Everglades. I've worked across party lines to bring together 200 members of Congress to ensure that we prevent cuts to Medicare Advantage. And I'm proud of the legislation I passed to help lower flood insurance rates for Floridians and help our citrus farmers dealing with greening. And these accomplishments are in stark contrast to my opponent, who doesn't even show up to work. In fact, Senator Rubio has the worst voting record of any senator from Florida in nearly 50 years and has gone on to endorse Donald Trump, the man that, by his own account, he doesn't trust with the nuclear codes. And that's exactly why Florida's four major newspapers have endorsed me, including the Miami Herald, his hometown paper, because they know I'm going to show up to work each and every day for the people of Florida. Thank you.
Senator Rubio.
Thank you. Well, thank you guys for hosting this debate and everybody for being here, and I appreciate the opportunity. Here's the choice in this election, because elections are at their best when they're about clear choices, and this election is a clear choice. It's a choice between someone and myself who's proud of my 6 years in the Senate and before that, my 9 years in the Florida legislature. I actually have real concrete achievements I can point to, things I've been able to do on behalf of the state of Florida. For example, the Central Everglades Planning Project, that's basically been stuck in limbo for over a decade, it passed because I was able to convince a key colleague of mine to change his mind and become a supporter of it. You know that today American foreign aid around the world is leveraged to ensure that we're taking on human trafficking because of the Girls Count Act that I passed. You know, slumlords in Jacksonville and Riviera Beach and Orlando, they're under investigation because of the pressure I, working with Senator Nelson, put on them. Time and again, during my 6 years in the Senate, I've proven I can get things done, and I encourage voters to compare that to Congressman Murphy's record. He cited some examples tonight of achievements. They're not true. And as you'll learn throughout this debate, he's been there for 4 years, and no one's even noticed. This is a clear record and a clear difference, and that's the choice between voters. We're too important a state to have a senator that doesn't know how to get things done. I do, and I will.
All right, Senator, thank you. Gentlemen, each of your Senate campaigns has been targeted by one primary criticism. We're going to begin by allowing you to address that criticism directly. Congressman Murphy, I'll start with you. You have repeatedly been attacked during this campaign as someone who has padded his resume. Now, you cite your work as a CPA and a small businessman as reasons you'd make a good U.S. senator. Though we know you never became a licensed CPA in the state of Florida, and you ran an environmental cleanup business with your father for less than 6 months. Explain why this experience qualifies you for the work in the U.S. Senate.
Yes, well, thank you for this question. And I'm so grateful for PolitiFact, an independent fact-checking agency that has gone through these accusations. And in fact, the last seven claims thrown out by Senator Rubio and his right-wing friends have all been debunked, rated as false. Here's the facts. I am a CPA. Got my license in 2009. I'm one of nine CPAs in the House of Representatives right now. And if elected to the Senate, would be the second CPA in the history of our country to serve there. And if you look at our fiscal house, I think we could probably use a few more CPAs. And I'm proud of my small business experience, proud of what I was able to do to help prevent some of the oil that was coming down and potentially coming down our West Coast. And I'm proud and would be quite willing, quite frankly, to put up my experience in the private sector as a CPA and small business person up against my opponent, who's been a lobbyist and career politician his entire career. You see, we need changes in Washington, D.C., and Senator Rubio has been lockstep with the special interest groups. He's done nothing but do the bidding for the interest groups. In fact, we all know he never shows up to work, but when he does, he has a 98% voting record with the Koch brothers, a right-wing special interest group. You see, I believe we can do more, and I'm proud of my accomplishments because they've all been bipartisan in nature. I've been able to bring home money to help with research for our citrus farmers, bring home money to help the Everglades. Was able to work with Congressman Yoho just recently to help our veterans with the backlog. I will continue reaching across the aisle to solve these problems in the United States Senate to help the people of Florida.
All right, Congressman, thank you. Senator Rubio, you said in last week's debate that you'll serve a full six-year term in the U.S. Senate, God willing. And you used that qualifier four times in the debate. Now, we know you said the prayer convinced you following the Pulse nightclub shootings that this Senate race is one you needed to be in, even though he had originally declared you would not run while you're running for president. Is God willing a way out in case prayer convinces you to change your mind about a run in 2020 for the White House?
No, God willing is something I always say, because I deeply believe that while man plans his steps, it's God that plans our course. I do. I believe that, for example, no matter what happens on November 8th, on November 9th, the sun is going to rise and the creator of the universe will still be sitting on the throne, and that everything that's going to happen will be ordered by him. I believe that deeply. And so that's why I always use that. It's not a qualifier. It's what I truly believe. Now, let me address what Congressman Murphy just said a moment ago, because I think he's living up to his reputation as a serial embellisher. First of all, he didn't run because he was a CPA. When he ran for Congress 4 years ago, he told people his experience as a CPA was going to make him a good congressman. Problem is, he doesn't have any, because in Florida, he doesn't have a license to be a CPA, and you can't be a CPA in Florida and work as one if you don't have a license. He still doesn't have a Florida CPA license. He talked here again today about how he helped clean up the oil spill. He didn't. Independent fact checkers confirm he didn't have a single contract to do so. So why does someone make things up? You make them up because you don't have anything real to point to. The congressman talked about $2 billion that he was able to get for the Everglades. No, he didn't. Those were projects that were in the water bill that were suggested by the Army Corps of Engineers a long time ago. He had nothing to do with them being in the bill, and they would have passed with or without him. He talked about saving Medicare Advantage recently. He didn't do anything except sign on to a letter. He didn't save Medicare Advantage. He has no record of achievement, and I encourage people to compare that to the things I've done in my 9 years in Tallahassee, including two as Speaker, and the things that I've done over the last 6 years, bill after bill. There are sanctions today on Hezbollah because of a bill I passed. Maduro in Venezuela has been sanctioned, not once but twice, because of a bill I passed, and on and on. Thank you, sir.
Can I just jump in here?
Yes, you can.
Senator, if you voted as much as you lied, you might actually be a decent senator. But you continue to throw out these lies. They have all been debunked by PolitiFact. You see, I'm proud of what I've accomplished, proud of what I've done, and again, willing to put that up to your record. And look, you know, we were already just asked this question about your comments about not running for office. Let's rewind a little bit here. You said 10,000 times was your quote that you weren't going to run for the Senate again. And the day before qualifying, of course, you throw your name back in. And then it takes you 4 months to finally admit to the voters that you want this job. Senator, it took you 4 months to do that. All of a sudden, the polls are dead tied, and he's now going to lie to you all again and tell you he's going to serve a full term. Florida deserves better than that.
That's your time, sir. I want to let the senator respond to that.
Thank you. Well, first of all, the reason why he keeps bringing this up about me changing my mind is because it would have been a lot easier for him to win if I hadn't changed my mind. And so that's why he's probably upset that I decided to run. Second of all, we are now, 10 minutes into the debate. You've been given two chances to talk about your achievements. You don't have any. You've been there for 4 years. It's like it never even happened. Now, Florida is not just an important electoral state. It's the third largest state in the country, may potentially one day become the second largest, a key state in our country. Virtually every major issue before America has a presence here. We cannot afford to have someone in the United States Senate that after 4 years in Congress has never gotten anything done, never. And I encourage people to compare that to my record of getting things done, bill after bill, law after law, policy after policy that happened because I was there.
Gentlemen, if I could, and being the referee is no good. They didn't even give me a whistle tonight. But we have so much to cover. As you mentioned, we're 10 minutes in. The next question is Social Security, and it begins with you, Senator. You said earlier this year you'd favor increasing the retirement age for Social Security from 67 to 70 for future retirees. You're telling workers younger than 55, they'll have to work 3 extra years. That is correct.
That is not correct. So right now, as the law stands, the age is already going up incrementally. So for example, someone like me, I'm 45, after this year I feel 46, but I'm 45, and I would say that for me, instead of retiring at 67, I'd have to retire at 67 and a half. And here's the key. Nothing would change for people that are either retired or about to retire. My mom's 86 years old. She can't go back to work, and she relies on Social Security and Medicare as her key sustenance. I want that to continue unchanged. I don't want to change anything for people that are on it now or people that are near retirement. But yes, for younger workers, there was going to have to be some smaller changes or it won't exist. These programs are going bankrupt. Anyone who tells you that we can leave it exactly the way it is lying to you. And the longer we wait to address this reality, the likelier it's going to be that we may have to disrupt these programs for people already retired. I don't want to see that happen. Medicare and Social Security is not just critical to Floridians, it's critical to my mother, to people in my family. I want this program to survive, to thrive, and to be there when I retire, when my children retire, and for Americans on and on. But it won't be if we continue on the course that it is on now.
All right, Congressman Murphy, you said you oppose cutting Social Security benefits. You won't raise the eligibility age or reduce benefits based on income. So what will you do to protect Social Security?
Yes, well, you see, there's a stark contrast between my opponent and I when it comes to Social Security and Medicare. I believe these are two of the top achievements in our country's history. They've lifted and kept more people out of poverty than probably anything else. And you see, follow the money, folks. My opponent has taken millions and millions of dollars from special interest groups that want to dismantle these programs, which explains why he said Social Security and Medicare have, quote, weakened us as a people. You see, Senator Rubio wants to put Social Security, your money, in Wall Street. He wants to privatize it. He wants to turn Medicare into a voucher program, dismantling these programs. I couldn't disagree further. I believe we need to strengthen these programs. And I've introduced a bill called the Save Benefits Act that actually gives seniors a raise, helps with their cost of living adjustments. And I believe that by raising the cap, we can actually ensure that these programs are there not only for our current seniors, but for my generation and younger, because these programs have to be protected.
If I may respond, the comment about weakening as our people is as true as the CPA license is real. It's non-existent. Here's the bottom line. What I said is the debt is weakening our country. It absolutely is. It's $17 trillion. If you think about Social Security, it was designed when we had 16 workers for every retiree. Today, we are down to 3 workers for every retiree, and soon it will be down to 2 workers for every retiree. So anyone, including alleged CPAs, should be able to do the math and realize very quickly that this program's in a lot of trouble if there aren't some adjustments made to it. I don't want to dismantle Social Security and Medicare. Not only how do you explain that to voters, how do you explain that to my mother, who's on Social Security and Medicare? I want to save it. I want to preserve it. I want to improve it for people that are on it now. But there will have to be changes to the way it works for future beneficiaries in my generation, in the congressman's generation, and in my children's generation.
Sir, I'll offer a rebuttal opportunity for the congressman.
Thank you, because you know it's nice that you're talking moderate about these programs, but forget your quote. That was, you weakened us as a people. Beyond that, it's the programs you supported. It's the Ryan bill. It's privatizing Social Security and turning Medicare into a voucher program. That dismantles these programs. That is a huge change for these programs. So it's not just what you're saying right now on stage. It's what you've actually done as a senator. That should be very scary to our seniors. We can do more to ensure these programs are going to be there for generations to come.
And I'm going to say that that is false. I do not support privatizing Social Security. In fact, I said that repeatedly in 2010 when I ran the first time. I do not support privatizing Social Security, and I do not support turning Medicare into a voucher. I support turning it into a choice, which, by the way, it is now in many ways. That Medicare Advantage, which you claim to have saved from cuts, you did not, of course, is a choice program. It allows people on Medicare to decide whether they want to stay on traditional Medicare or go to a private provider. My mother's on Medicare Advantage. It works well for her. I just want more people to have that option.
All right, gentlemen, thank you.
Let the fact checkers get to this one.
Gentlemen, thank you. We're going to move on with a question from my colleague, Neil Brown of the Tampa Bay Times.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you. Let's talk about health care for a moment. Congressman Murphy, yesterday we learned that premiums for many of those insured under the Affordable Care Act are expected to rise an average of 25% next year. That's awfully steep. You've said you'd support some changes to the law. Can you be more specific than you've been so far as to what needs to be done to improve the law and reduce premiums?
Yes, well, thank you for that question. And there's no question that the Affordable Care Act was a huge step forward for our country. But the focus now has to be on getting it right. Right, working across the aisle to ensure that we are fixing it, making sure that we have more coverage for more people that's more affordable. And I believe we can do that, but you got to show up to work and you got to be willing to reach across the aisle. And you see, Senator Rubio has spent the last 6 years trying to undermine this legislation. He wants to take us back to the days where you could get dropped from your health insurance plan if you got sick, where you could be denied coverage if you had a pre-existing condition, where women were being charged more than men just because they were women, where seniors were being charged more for their prescription drugs. That's where he wants to take us back to. And I know he's about to tell us about the risk corridors and the plan that he's put forward. You see, that should be renamed the Florida Premium Increase. That is exactly why, and many healthcare experts have said, that is why our health insurance rates are going up right now, because of his plan. So I don't know why he brags about this. That has actually made it more expensive for you all. I believe that we can expand Medicaid. That means 900,000 more people in Florida alone would have access to affordable health care. I believe we should be pushing to ensure that our government is negotiating with the pharmaceutical companies. And I believe that we can do more to go after the waste, fraud, abuse, and duplication in our healthcare system. I also believe that we should be looking at a public option, especially in rural areas, because one of the major premises of the Affordable Care Act was that there was competition, that there were more people fighting to insure you. But you got to have that competition. The public option would be available for those to help lower those insurance rates.
All right, let's ask Senator Rubio.
Let me ask you this question this way.
You've repeatedly vowed to repeal Obamacare. But today, 20 more million Americans are insured since when you ran for this office the first time. What, if you repeal the Affordable Care Act, what will you do tomorrow for the people who have health insurance today?
Sure, great question. Let me first begin by saying he called it risk corridor. It's not a risk corridor, it's a bailout. Let me explain what happened when they negotiated Obamacare so everybody clearly understands. One of the ways that the Obama administration got the big insurance companies to support Obamacare is they put a provision in the law that said this: if you guys lose money under Obamacare, and we know you're going to lose money, we're going to bail you out and we're going to use taxpayer money to do it. And yes, I'm proud of the fact that we got rid of that. Why should we be using taxpayer money to bail out private insurance companies who are making millions of dollars in profits? Why should you be bailing out private insurance companies? And I want Congressman Murphy to answer, why is that the right thing for our country? Why should any of us, why should taxpayers be bailing out private insurance companies? I'm proud that we got rid of that. Now, what should we do instead of Obamacare? I do not want to go back to the old system. The old system didn't work. His answer, by the way, he didn't have an answer on a plan. His plan is, I want to make Obamacare even bigger. That's what his answer was. Here's a better approach. Number one, today, if your employer wants to give you money and say, here, instead of buying an insurance plan, we're going to give you health care money, and you can use it to buy any plan you want, you have to pay taxes on that money. I want to get rid of that. I want to make sure that if an employer decides to give you the money to go out and buy your own health care, that you can do so tax-free. Or, of course, they can continue to buy it for you. If that is not available to you, I want every American to have a fully refundable tax credit, which they can use to buy health insurance from any company in America across state lines of the kind of health insurance you want. And for people for pre-existing conditions, that is the part that the government should step in and fill with a high-risk pool, where we can insure people that find it difficult to find insurance because they have pre-existing conditions that ultimately make them uninsurable. That is a much better approach than the system we have now, where you are forcing people onto Obamacare, because if they don't, they get fined on their taxes.
Senator, thank you. Congressman, rebuttal?
Yes, please. I'm glad you brought up the high-risk pools, too. You see, that plan that you just put forward, Senator, has been tried in 35 states, and it failed in all 35 states. It adds billions of dollars to the deficit, it makes it more expensive, and drops people from their plans, and it's already failed. But that's, of course, the talking point given to him by the Koch brothers and the other special interest groups. That plan doesn't work. We can make the Affordable Care Act more affordable. We can make sure that more people have access to it. And in these risk corridors, the idea was to help level and smooth the costs, because they didn't know who was going to sign up, how risky they were going to be, what healthcare problems they were going to have. So they wanted to help level that out so we didn't have these surges in prices that we're seeing right now. But because of your legislation that you passed, we do have a spike. So it's thanks to you that Floridians are now paying more, and you're bragging about that? That makes no sense.
Well, I think Congressman Murphy should answer again the question that I asked. Why is it right for you, the American taxpayer, to have to bail out private insurance companies? These companies are making record profits. Why should we be bailing out private insurance? This is not about evening anything out. This is about ensuring that these companies would participate in Obamacare with the promise that if they lost money, you, the taxpayer, were going to bail them out. And the only thing my law did is said, you can bail them out with their money that they're paying as a fee into the program, but you cannot bail them out with taxpayer money. And just to tell you the lawlessness of this administration, you know what the administration is doing now? The administration has gone to the insurance companies and has said to them, don't worry, just sue us, and we won't defend ourselves in court. You'll get a default judgment against us, and you'll get your taxpayer money anyway. This is an outrage.
Senator,
no one should be in favor of taxpayer money bailing out insurance companies.
Senator, thank you. We're going to move on now to the Supreme Court. This is for both of you. We'll begin with Congressman Murphy. The next president is expected to send several new Supreme Court nominees to the Senate for confirmation. What criteria will be important to you to confirm a nominee from a president of the opposing party?
Yes, well, the Constitution is pretty clear on this one. It's the president's role to nominate a Supreme Court justice, and it is the Senate's job to confirm that individual. In fact, I think this is one of the most important jobs of being a United States senator. And I think it's critical that whomever that choice is, number one, understands the Constitution, that they will follow the rule of law, and that they will be able to make sure that that is played out fairly and equitably for everybody in our country. And this is one of the areas that I think is pretty disturbing to a lot of Americans, quite frankly, because the Senate hasn't acted. You see, the Senate hasn't even had a hearing on Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland, by all accounts, is as qualified as anybody we've ever had to be in the Supreme Court. Yet there hasn't been a hearing. In fact, Senator Rubio hasn't even taken the time to meet with Merrick Garland. I guess he's too busy running for president, but he hasn't even taken the time to get to know him to ask these simple questions. And the American people right now are so frustrated with Congress, right? They're mad at the House, they're mad at the Senate, they're mad at Republicans and Democrats. But I don't think they ever expected that the dysfunction in the House would ever bleed over to the Supreme Court. And that's what's happening right now. You see, the Supreme Court isn't even taking up certain cases right now because they know it's going to be a tie, right? That is a complete unnecessary course of action. It's all because of the obstructionists and the Tea Party Republicans like Senator Rubio that care more about their own ambitions than they do getting things done for the people of Florida in this country.
Senator Rubio, again, the question is the criteria that are important. A nominee from the opposition party, should the president of the opposing party be in the White House?
First of all, there's one primary criteria, and that is that the person understands the proper role of the Supreme Court in this country. I don't care what the justice's personal views are. I want to understand, and I want a record that proves that they understand what the proper role of the Supreme Court is. Let me tell you what the proper role of the Supreme Court is not. The proper role of the Supreme Court is not to write laws. That is the job of the legislative branch that's accountable to voters. The proper role of the Supreme Court is to take the case before them and apply the Constitution according to its original meaning. What did those words mean to the people who wrote them? Now, if you don't like what the Constitution says, then we have a constitutional amendment process. And that process is the way you change the Constitution. So what I care about, my number one criteria is the person before us as a nominee, because they're all smart people, they all went to Ivy League schools, they're all intelligent, but do they understand the proper role of the court? And let me tell you that if the people on that court are not people that understand the proper role, then we will lose our Constitution. Because the role of the court is to apply that Constitution according to its original meaning. And that is the singular criteria that I will use in evaluating any nomination from either president, Republican or Democrat, that comes before the Senate.
Gentlemen, thank you both. We're going to move on now to my colleague Patricia Mazze from the Miami Herald.
Good evening, gentlemen. Senator Rubio, nearly 500,000 people have died in the 5-year civil war in Syria, including tens of thousands of children. Millions of people fleeing their homes led to a refugee crisis and opened the door to ISIS. You voted against U.S. airstrikes in Syria in 2013. Would you vote to commit U.S. ground troops to join the rebels' fight and topple the Assad regime?
Well, first let me say that the situation in Syria today is much more difficult to solve than it would have been 4 years ago, when I outlined and prodded the president for a very clear way forward. What I asked at the time was, let's identify elements on the ground in Syria that we believe we can work with. Now listen, they're not going to find a lot of, you know, Thomas Jefferson's running around in Syria. But let's find people we can work with, and let's ensure that they are the best equipped, best trained group on the ground, because if you don't, it will leave a vacuum. And that vacuum is going to be filled in Syria the way every vacuum is filled in the Middle East, and that is by radical jihadists. The president chose not to pursue that route. As a result, people say moderate groups, or certainly less Islamist groups, declined in their capabilities, creating the vacuum for ISIS to emerge after they crossed over from Iraq and the situation that we find ourselves in today. The bottom line is this: our interests in Syria at this moment are singular, and that is to ensure that it is not a haven, a safe haven, for radical Islamists to be able to take root and plan attacks against the United States and our interests around the world. And so if a president comes forward with a plan that works, that could actually achieve that aim, I would most certainly consider it. I do not believe it will require ground troops. In fact, I believe that would be counterproductive. But I do think the United States would need to do more in the furtherance of that plan. And the reason why I voted against the president's proposal was because that was not what the president was proposing. He was proposing what they called pinprick strikes, basically a symbolic strike to send a message, but not backed up by a clear plan. And in fact, when I voted against it, I articulated what we should have been doing instead. This president failed to do so. It left behind a vacuum, and the vacuum has not only been filled now by radical Islamists, that vacuum has now been filled by Iran and by Vladimir Putin. And the result is we have even less influence in that region today than we did just 4 years ago.
Yes, well, there's no question that things have become much more complicated in Syria. But it was pretty clear, the people of Syria spoke out 5 years ago that they wanted to have a small voice, at least some say, in their government. And since then, what have we seen? Assad has done nothing but murder and kill, use chemical weapons on his own people. So we have to make it abundantly clear that Assad must leave power. And we must do that by working with our allies. But what we're seeing is a more complicated situation developing. And as a member of the House Intelligence Committee, I think it's critical that we unite to ensure that this problem doesn't get any worse. And what we're seeing now is Vladimir Putin getting more and more involved behind Assad, continuing to help boost him up. And I believe that it is our alliances that are going to help bring Assad down and get Russia out. But how do we do that? You see, it's these alliances. And those very alliances that will give us that strength, the choice of Marco Rubio, Donald Trump, to be our next commander-in-chief, he wants to tear up those alliances. That's not going to strengthen us. You see, Senator Rubio has lost all credibility, in my opinion, by supporting Donald Trump in this election. Because Donald Trump, we all know, has millions of dollars of financial ties to Putin, thinks Putin is, quote, a strong leader, and now wants to tear up the very alliances that will help ensure that we get rid of Assad. So it's pretty confusing to me, especially somebody that's on the House Intelligence Committee that knows how precarious this situation is and knows how dangerous Vladimir Putin's involvement in Russia and the Middle East is.
Well, if I may respond, a couple points. Secretary Clinton, the Democratic nominee, was the Secretary of State when these decisions were being made. And that's who you support for President of the United States. I disagree with Donald Trump on this issue, and I've repeatedly pointed as to why he's wrong on a number of issues. You talk about the alliances. I'm not sure which alliance you're talking about. For example, the United States today is working with Kurdish elements in the northern part of Syria as they attempt to close what's called the Manbij province. That has created an incredible strain between us and our Turkish allies to the north, who view their effort to unify those cantons as a direct risk to them. And so which alliance are you talking about? The one with the Kurds or the Syrian Kurds or the one with the Turks? This is the situation this president has put us in. He's put us in this situation because he has no credibility either with the Turks and increasingly with the Syrian Kurds as well. And so, again, these are the consequences of a failed foreign policy. This country today has less influence in Syria than it did 3 or 4 years ago as the direct result of the broken foreign policy of Barack Obama, much of which was instituted in this part of the world when Secretary Clinton was over in the Senate, in the State Department.
It is important to note how many factions are involved in Syria right now, whether that's the Kurds, the Peshmerga, Iraq, Hezbollah, Russia, the moderate rebel forces that we have tried to arm in many ways. And it's important to talk about them because I think Senator Rubio and I, both members of the Intelligence Committee, know how complicated it is. But we also both know that Donald Trump probably can't name or identify any of those groups or their involvement. Yet you are continuing to support Donald Trump. We have seen 16 U.S. senators not only disavow Donald Trump, but unendorse him because they know how dangerous he is to our country. So you've got to be able to stand up to people like Donald Trump if you care about our national security.
Gentlemen, at this point, we're going to stop
but I'm not
this.
Just say, because he criticized someone for not knowing the facts about the region. Congressman, there are no Peshmerga in Syria. The Peshmerga are Iraqi.
Yes, and
so
fighting.
Again, so no.
And they're helping us fight.
In Iraq, not in Syria. The Syrian Kurds, in fact, don't get along with the Iraqi Kurds, which is adding more
which
to the complexity
so
of the region. Here's the bottom line. Syria is not going to be New Zealand anytime in the near future. Our interest in that part of the world is to ensure that there is stability in that region, stability so that, and at minimum, that there isn't a vacuum that can be filled by radical jihadist elements who use that vacuum to plot against our country.
Congressman? Do you have a response to that?
Yeah, I mean, it just goes back to the same point that, Senator Rubio continues to support Donald Trump. And it is shameful that he stands there with him when you know that Trump doesn't even know any of this. We are seeing what's happening in Mosul right now. Donald Trump is saying it's a failed plan that's not even working. We are going to move on Raqqa, and we have to continue working with all of the various factions that we get along with. But we haven't had any action, and we haven't had leaders willing to stand up. And look, I will stand up to anybody, whether they're Republican, whether they're Democrat, to do what I think is best.
This last question has gone on very long. We have other issues I know you both want to get to. I want everybody to take a breath, take a drink of water. We're going to take a very quick break and come right back. You're watching Decision 2016 Before You Vote. Again, we'll return in just a moment.
I'm Mark Hayes. Thanks so much for joining us. This is WUSF 89.7. Coming up on Q this evening, comedian, actor, director Mike Myers joins new host Tom Power. Myers' new book is about Canada. In it, he explores his roots and examines who Canada is as a nation. Stick around for Q coming up at 8.
In Florida, a long line of people stood outside a Donald Trump rally. Another long line stood outside a Hillary Clinton rally.
You should have a Gold Star parent as the first person you see every morning so that you look into the eyes of somebody whose son or daughter died protecting this country.
My dad got deported. That's something I can never get back.
Dueling visions at dueling campaign rallies. Tomorrow on Morning Edition.
Don't miss Morning Edition tomorrow from 5 to 9 here on your NPR station. Our forecast from Bay News 9 calls for a beautiful overnight, 68 for the low. It will be sunny and breezy tomorrow with a high of 84. The Florida Orchestra does another in their coffee concert series tomorrow morning. It's a program of patriotic music at the Mahaffey Theater. It's an 11 o'clock curtain. Morian Arts Center's Eat Rich, Play Dirty event is coming up Saturday, November 5th at the historic train station in St. Petersburg. It's an evening of live music, food and drink from Rococo Steak, hands-on activities, and auction and raffle packages. Information is at morianartscenter.org. This is WUSF 89.7, your NPR station.
That's organist Mike LaDon and his Groover Quartet as they perform the classic At Last from a brand new recording called That Feelin'. I'm Mike Cornett. We'll debut That Feelin' and more from Mike LaDon on his 55th birthday tonight on All Night Jazz. The adventure begins tonight at 9 on WUSF 89.7.
Lively debate so far, lively crowd. I'll ask our audience to retake their seats. Let me check on them.
Excited.
I promise there's 30 minutes left. Everybody gets to talk. All right, we're going to go now to Patricia Mazzei for a question to both candidates.
Senator Rubio, the president of one of the nation's largest police organizations recently apologized to minority communities for mistreatment by police, which has led to mistrust among blacks and Hispanics. Is that mistrust justified, and what can you do about it in the Senate?
Yeah, well, let me begin by saying that I believe the overwhelming majority of our men and women in law enforcement do an extraordinary job for our country and for our state and for our cities and our communities, and I want to thank them again tonight, because if there's danger, we're going to call them, and they're going to show up not knowing what's on the other side of that call. And we've seen far too many cases of men and women wearing blue and brown, our deputy sheriffs, our sheriff's deputies, and our police officers who have lost their lives protecting us. On the other hand, I think it's impossible to ignore that there are many communities in this country, predominantly minority communities, who do have a terrible relationship with police departments and a huge level of mistrust. I've personally talked about this. I talked about it for months, even during the presidential campaign, about people that I know personally. One of them is a police officer who had been pulled over numerous times in the course of 2 years with no explanation. And he was resentful about that, and he didn't know how to explain it to his son, and he was upset. And when you hear those stories, you understand that. You do. And I think you can understand that while at the same time honoring the men and women who serve us in uniform. But here's the bottom line. Whether you agree with what I just said or not, if a significant percentage of the American family feels that they are treated differently by law enforcement because of the color of their skin, then we have a problem, and it needs to be addressed. Now, one of the things we've done, law enforcement is primarily a function of state and local government. And it's important to talk about that there is no such thing as the police department. There are multiple law enforcement agencies in this country in the thousands. Some do an excellent job. For example, the sheriff up in Duval County, they've got a great program and a pretty good relationship with their communities. Other places need to improve. The one thing I have been in support of is a grant program sponsored by my colleague from South Carolina, Tim Scott, who would basically create grants for smaller law enforcement departments to be able to afford body cameras. I believe that's actually in the best interest of both the officers and also the community.
All right, Senator, that's your time.
Congressman Murphy, you say you have a criminal justice reform plan if you get elected to the Senate, but what have you done as a House member to show Floridians in both the law enforcement and minority communities that you have cared about this issue in the past?
Yes, thanks, Patty. And look, there's no question the vast majority of police officers, sheriffs, law enforcement are dedicated, brave men and women who are putting their life on the line for all of us each and every day. But there's also no question that there has been a breakdown in trust in so many of our communities. Just in the past several months in my own congressional district, there's been two terrible tragedies. One young man named Corey Jones, he was my age actually, he was a drummer in his church band every Sunday he played. And one night he was on his way home from a performance and his car broke down. Minutes later, he was shot and killed by a police officer. Another young man named DeMarcus Seymour in Fort Pierce, young man unarmed with some buddies walking home, ends up getting shot and killed by police officers. And I've had a chance to worship and pray and really get to know these families and seeing how not only does this tear apart a community, it tears apart that entire family. And we have to do more. And we must make sure that we are building more trust. And I have introduced the Trust Act that will help build more trust between the police officers and the communities that they're serving. And I believe that we have to make sure that all of law enforcement has the resources they need for things like body cameras, so we know exactly what happened. You see, we are getting more and more transparency with more technology, and we have to make sure that all of law enforcement has this. But what we can't do is have presidential candidates like Donald Trump, who are the most racist, bigoted people ever to run for office, and they are still espousing this hatred, which is the exact problem. That sort of division is what is ripping apart our communities, and we deserve better than that.
Congressman, that's time.
I might just respond. It's now the fifth time. Basically, the answer to every question tonight by Congressman Murphy is Donald Trump. It reminds me, I'm paraphrasing.
I'm paraphrasing
the vice president who once said that someone else's platform is basically a noun, a verb, and in this case, a noun, a verb, and Donald Trump. That's his answer to everything.
You're the one.
Here's
that's
the bottom line
him,
on
Senator.
This issue, okay? We do have a breakdown at the community level. And it's a deep breakdown that, yes, in many communities, the law enforcement force that they've put forth does not reflect the community they're supposed to be protecting. And law enforcement departments are beginning to recognize that. But I think there are even deeper issues that we need to confront. One of the things I'm proudest of is the work I did as Speaker of the Florida House to bring about children's zones, modeled after the Harlem's children's zone, started by Jeffrey Canada. We began one in Miami. It's now spread to Orlando and to Jacksonville. And one of the things it does is it goes into inner cities and delineates a geographic area and says, we're going to do everything we can to help people living within this area to overcome the challenges they face.
Right,
because here's what we do know. If a child
here,
is born in a broken
right,
family
Senator,
in substandard housing in a dangerous neighborhood,
they're going to
struggle to
respond.
Succeed.
Senator, please.
Because I did introduce a criminal justice plan, and I worked on it with Senator Cory Booker. And in developing this plan, I can't tell you how frustrated Senator Booker was with Senator Rubio for not signing on his legislation, which has overwhelming bipartisan support. And there are some pretty common sense provisions in there that will help with recidivism, that will help to ensure that folks that have done time have an opportunity to get back in the workforce, to make sure that they can vote, that they have the education for the jobs of tomorrow. Common sense things that we can do to make sure everybody has an opportunity. But Senator Rubio didn't even support that plan.
If I may respond to that. Number one, I am in favor of criminal justice reform. Here's what I'm not in favor of, though, and that is rolling back some of the reforms that have been put in place that have locked up really bad people for a very long time and kept them from going back into the streets and harming people. Now, do I believe a lot of people are being arrested for crimes that perhaps we should be diverting them? Absolutely. Look, if you're 18 years old and you're arrested for a minor offense and you cannot afford a private attorney, you're assigned a public defender. And that public defender has 1,000 cases that they're handling. So they convince you to plead guilty to something, and now you have a record. And now you can't get into the military, now you can't find a job. Absolutely, for first-time offenders, young people, we should be doing more to divert them out of the system. But that's largely at the state level, because it's under state
All
laws
right,
that
Senator,
they're being prosecuted.
Thank you again, sir.
But I'm not
going to
let a bunch
up.
Of dangerous people
We're
back into the street
We're
going
to move on
either.
Now. Sir, I apologize. We need to move
no,
on.
I understand.
We have so much to cover. Let's go to Neil Brown now from the Tampa Bay Times.
Time to talk about another big issue that didn't get much airtime in your last debate, the economy. Florida is doing better than most when it comes to job growth, but wages, as we know, are generally stagnant. A recent study by Bloomberg News showed Miami and Tampa among the 10 worst cities in America when it comes to the income gap between the haves and have-nots. What ideas do each of you have to get more Floridians a pay raise? Congressman Murphy?
Yeah, thank you, because that's a critical question that's got to be addressed. And there's no question that we have made some strides over the past several years, but there are far too many people that are still being left out. And as I travel the state, I often hear the same story, where people are telling me that they haven't had a raise in 15 years, that their child has $50,000 of student debt and still can't get a job, where their mom can't afford their prescription drugs. And they tell me that they're reading the newspaper about this economic recovery, but they're not feeling it. And far too many people have been left out of this recovery. So we've got to do more. And I believe that starts off with investing more in education, investing more from pre-K to PhD programs. And there shouldn't be a difference in the quality of education depending on what neighborhood you're from. We should be investing more in infrastructure. They say there's about $2.5 trillion offshore right now. Why in the world aren't we bringing that money back, investing it into good middle-class paying jobs? Why aren't we raising the minimum wage? We have to address our tax code as well. We have to address our overly burdensome regulatory environment. And these are all common sense things that I think we can solve and help our economy. But when Senator Rubio was asked about one of these ideas, the minimum wage, his quote was that it's a waste of time. There are hundreds of thousands of people right now living on minimum wage. And I believe that we can do more to help them out, because anybody that's willing to work a full-time job in this country shouldn't be living in poverty. And Senator, we know that you think being a senator, of course, is a waste of time, which is why you missed 41% of your votes, more than anybody else while running for president. But the difference is you got paid 100% of your salary when you were missing those votes. Those folks on minimum wage, they're not getting paid. So there's a huge difference here. You got to show up. You got to roll up your sleeves and be willing to work across the aisle to solve these problems.
All right, sir. The same question to Senator Rubio.
Well, first of all, I appreciate and find it ironic that I'm being lectured about the plight of the working class by a millionaire who inherited his money is lecturing the son of working class immigrants who inherited no money. So I understand clearly what people are going through. And as you've outlined, it's not just a wage gap. It's the cost of living that continues to rise. And it's not just housing. It's things like access to the internet. You can't do homework today if you don't have access to the internet. Data plans are out of control. People's phones are catching fire. I mean, all kinds of things are going on that we need to be addressing. And I also appreciate the congressman's indictment of the Obama economy. It has been a disaster for America. You talk about more jobs being created. They don't pay enough, especially due to the cost of living. So what creates better paying jobs? Two things. Number one, an economy that's growing and people with the skills necessary to succeed in that economy, because we are living through a rapid and dynamic economic transformation. America today is not globally competitive. We have one of the highest business tax rates on the planet. We have over $2.8 trillion of American corporate cash parked overseas. $2.8 trillion. That is larger than the size of the entire Russian economy. We have regulations that are out of control, again, making America a more expensive place to do business. So we have to become more competitive by rolling back taxes, especially on small business, and by rolling back the regulatory burden. And the other is we need to begin to diversify our educational choices. It doesn't just have to be a four-year degree. We need more vocational training, something I've worked on since my time in the legislature. We need more alternatives to traditional higher education. And I actually have a detailed bipartisan plan that I've worked on with numerous senators that would create options for a single mother who's worked for years, for example, as a receptionist that wants to become a paralegal. We also need to allow more dual enrollment in high school, allowing students in high school to use Pell Grant while still in high school to be able to go to a community college at the same time and graduate certified and ready to work as a plumber, an electrician,
Senator,
a pipe fitter. These are
that's
important
time,
measures that we can do to turn our economy around.
What Senator Rubio just laid out is the same failed trickle-down economics. More tax breaks to the millionaires, the billionaires, and the largest corporations. And Senator, you might have forgot my family story too, because we've all got them. You see, my dad never graduated from college. He was a union carpenter and a union laborer. Worked every single day out of the back of his pickup truck to build a family business, to build a business to provide for his family. And the number one thing that he taught me was hard work, was showing up to work, something that we all know you forgot. And Senator, it's important to note who you're fighting for right now, because you're fighting for the millionaires, the billionaires, the largest corporations, right? You are against raising the minimum wage. You are against protecting Social Security and Medicare. You're against investing more in education.
I want to let the senator respond, Congressman.
First of all, your time is up. I admire very much your father's story, but that's not your story. You've never had to worry a day in your life about where your next check is going to come from or how your next bill is going to be paid. I have, and so I know what people are going through. The minimum wage idea, I do want to increase people's wages by growing the economy and by my idea for a wage enhancement, which is better than a minimum wage increase that we have learned from independent experts could eliminate between 500,000 and 600,000 jobs if we raise it to the level that you're talking about doing. You make people more expensive than machines, they will be replaced by machines. It's already happening. I promise you that in less than 5 years, the majority of these fast food, for example, restaurants won't even have people at that window. It'll be a touchscreen. And so we do want to help workers with the skills that they need to find the better paying jobs of the 21st century. The outdated ideas that you're proposing would make people more expensive than machines, and it would accelerate this transformation in a negative way.
I have questions for both of you. For the first time ever, the U.S. abstained from the U.N. continuing resolution vote against the U.S. embargo on Cuba. that is history-making. U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power said it's history-making. It shows that the world is against us when it comes to the embargo. I'm actually going to start with you, Congressman Murphy. In an early debate, you said you'd support targeted sanctions against members of the Cuban government. But you didn't say where you stand on the trade embargo itself. Would you vote to lift the U.S. embargo on Cuba?
Yes, well, this is an important question. We did get a chance to talk about this in our last debate. And, you know, I'll tell you the same story I told last time. I know this is a very personal situation for many people. And I have some Cuban relatives. Some are here this evening. And I have talked to them at length about this. And I understand this is personal. But I also believe we've had a policy in place for over 50 years that hasn't worked. Right? It's only empowered the Castro regime. I want to help the Cuban people out. And I don't believe that anybody does democracy like America. So let's make sure we are providing more opportunity for those Cuban people. Would we rather see, you know, our own cruise ships, Royal Caribbean and Carnival there in Havana? Or would we rather see Russian spy ships there? And we can do more to not only protect our country on a national security basis, but help the Cuban people out. So I would continue to ensure that we do have targeted sanctions against the Castro regime and those that have had terrible human rights violations, and believe that we have to move toward normalization. I don't think we can do this overnight, but we have to continue down that road to help the Cuban people.
Senator? Actually, I'm not sure if the congressman is aware of this, probably isn't. But what the president did 2 weeks ago removed even further sanctions. Members of the Communist Party and the government in Cuba are now eligible for remittances for the first time in our history. Those are not targeted sanctions. That's a massive opening in exchange for nothing in return. The second point is what happened at the UN today is nothing short of lawlessness. Whether you agree with embargo or not, that is the law of the United States. And the refusal of this administration to enforce that at the United Nations and stand up for that is lawlessness. If you don't like the policy, work to change it. I know that's what they're trying to do. But I'm going to tell you, you can't just ignore the law of this country the way this administration habitually does. And as far as the opening is concerned, cruise ships, basically an invasion of cruise ships is going to bring democracy to Cuba? It is not, because the Cuban government is a dictatorship. We have now made over 2 years concession after concession to the Castro regime. They have taken not even a quarter step towards democracy, not even a quarter step. And by the way, Congressman, on the same day that the president announced that we were now going to be allowing the full sale of cigars and rum from Cuba, you know what the Cuban government did that very same week? They invited the Russians to open a base on the island of Cuba for the first time in 30 years. This is not working. A better model would have been to do what they did with Myanmar or Burma, which is for every step they took towards democracy, we took a step in towards the sanctions relief. This is an all one-way deal. And by the way, in Cuba today, there are still people living there who stole your Medicare money. They're fugitives of American justice, harbored by the Castro government. A cop killer lives on the island of Cuba today. For 35 years, Joanne Chesmar murdered a trooper in New Jersey, and the Cuban government continues to protect her. None of that was discussed in this deal. It is a crazy, broken deal that needs to be revisited because it is rewarding the Castro regime and asking nothing in return on human rights or on the dignity or freedom of the Cuban people.
Congressman Murphy.
Yes, and Senator, I do appreciate your efforts on cracking down there. But just this very weekend, Donald Trump was on a Sunday morning show here in Miami. And when asked about violating the Cuban embargo, he basically admitted that he did it. Senator, we know this is one of your core issues, and I'm not trying to be critical because I do respect your position. But the person you chose to be our next president has basically admitted he violated the embargo, and you continue to stand by his side despite this being one of your core initiatives that you care about. So what's it going to take for you to unendorse Donald Trump? Is there anything he can do or say at this point that you will not continue to support him?
That's bizarre. Congressman Murphy, you're criticizing Donald Trump for supporting a position that you have. You support lifting the embargo.
I'm criticizing you for not having the courage,
so finally,
Senator.
So Patrick Murphy agrees
you
with
have
Donald
no
Trump
backbone.
On Cuba.
I would ask the audience to please refrain. We're only about 10 minutes away. You can applaud all you'd like.
Look, the bottom line is that at this moment, moving forward when it comes to Cuba, it is important for us to have leverage. The Cuban leadership is in their mid-80s, which means, according to actuarials, they're not going to be around much longer. And our hope is that they will be replaced by a new generation of leadership that is open to making steps forward. The problem is this, my friends, that there is no precedent in human history for tourism, or for that matter, full economic engagement as being the sole catalyst for democracy in a country resistant to democracy. The Cuban government is not interested in democracy. They're interested in dollars. They want dollars to be able to fund their repressive regime. They want more money to be able to leave what's in place now permanent. And they want us to accept it as a legitimate form of government. And I ask you this, Congressman, why are the Cuban people the only people in this hemisphere that cannot
Senator,
vote for their leader?
That is your time on this question. This next question goes to both of you. First to Congressman Murphy. Senator, there's a reference here to you, though, at the same time, because last January in a town hall in Iowa, you said, and I'm quoting, "We're not going to fix America with senators and congressmen." And the fact is, it looks like the American people agreed with your statement, because this Real Clear Politics average of six polls this past summer shows almost 9 in 10 Americans disapprove of the job Congress is doing. That's representatives and senators. That disapproval is directly tied to partisan infighting and to gridlock, to inaction. How and on which issues will you work with the opposing party to effect change, positive change in America?
Yes, well, thank you for this question, because it is that very gridlock that I think is holding this country back more than probably anything else. And one of the first things that I did when elected to the Congress was start a freshman bipartisan group called United Solutions. I was able to bring about 40% of the freshman class together to talk about issues that we agreed on instead of the issues that we disagreed on. And from that group, I've been able to put forward legislation to help get our fiscal house in order. You know, there's a great quote from President Truman where he said, "It's amazing what you can accomplish if you don't care who gets the credit." And I'm proud of all of my achievements in the Congress over the past 4 years because they've been bipartisan. They've all proven my ability to reach across the aisle and get things done. Whether that's working with Congressman Yoho recently in North Florida to help ensure that our veterans are getting the care they need by reducing the backlog. Whether that means working with Congressman Posey just north of my congressional district to pass legislation to help our estuary system that's being devastated by the discharges. That legislation was signed by law by the president. Helping to work across the aisle to bring home billions of dollars for the Everglades. Helping to pass insurance, a flood insurance bill that will help reduce flood insurance rates for Floridians. Working with Congressman Rooney to bring home millions of dollars of research to help our citrus farmers that are dealing with greening. And I will continue to reach across the aisle and solve problems. And that is in stark contrast to Senator Rubio, who I already pointed out, when he shows up to vote, votes 98% of the time with the Koch brothers, right? These special interest right-wing groups. He is doing the bidding for them in Washington, D.C., not you all.
Senator Rubio's time now, Congressman. Senator?
Do you know that Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua has banned me from traveling to that country? You know why? Because I worked across the aisle and we pressured the administration to criticize them for stealing an election, despite the resistance of Secretary Clinton, by the way. Obviously, I'm barred from traveling to Venezuela, too, but I'm repeatedly attacked by their leader. You know why? Because not once but twice, in a bipartisan way, I worked to impose sanctions on Maduro and all of his cronies that surround him. Hezbollah has criticized me by name. You know why? Because I worked in a bipartisan way to impose sanctions on them. You know that today U.S. foreign aid around the world is conditioned on whether or not countries are doing a good enough job of taking on human trafficking? You know why? Because I was able to work across the aisle and get these results. These are actual laws and measures that happened because I worked with people across the aisle to get consequential things done. And your answer is that when you got to Congress, you started a club called United Solutions. Well, we need a lot more than just that. We need actual results on behalf of the people of our state. I ask you again, look at his record of achievement. He keeps pointing back to all this money he got in the budget. He did not. These things were going to happen with or without, and they were part of broader bills. He had nothing to do with it. He has been in Congress for 4 years. He has never passed a single law that's been signed by the president with his name on it after 4 years. And I've been in the Senate for six, and I've passed law after law, including working across the aisle, signed by a Democrat president, even though four of those 6 years, I was in a Senate controlled by Harry Reid, where nothing was happening. And as far as his dysfunction, absolutely. The best example of it was this year when we needed Zika funding. I was the first Republican to come forward and support the president's $1.9 billion request. I voted for every single Zika funding bill, and we finally got it done.
Right,
that
Senator,
is what
I
we need in Washington.
I want to give the Congressman a chance to respond here before we move on to closing statements.
Yes, look, the Senator has proven himself ineffective in Washington, D.C. He just talked about Zika there. It took almost 8 months to ever get a vote on Zika. right? The president came out in February talking about how we needed to do something. I started working on this immediately, making sure that we were working with the private sector and NIH to make sure we had the resources to fight it. But he had zero influence in getting Mitch McConnell, his leader, to ever bring this up for a vote. So he has no influence there because everyone knows he's got one foot out the door. You got to show up to work. You got to get to know your colleagues. And I wish you would have come to my bipartisan group because Senator Nelson was there. We had numerous leaders, Republicans and Democrats, to help fight to bring money home
and
for the Everglades.
You're out of time. And gentlemen, if you want to get your closing statements in, okay. I've got time for the two closing statements and that's
well,
it.
Fine, then all right.
Otherwise, we could go all night with this discussion. The first closing statement by Cointoss goes to you, Congressman Murphy.
Yes, well, thank you. Thank the moderators. Thank you all for being here. And thank you, Senator Rubio. You see, as the Miami Herald said, this election is about courage. And Senator Rubio has failed that test. I'm proud of all the endorsements I've received from our newspapers. I'm proud of the support I've received from so many of you because Florida deserves a senator that's going to show up to work, somebody that's going to roll up their sleeves and get things done for Florida. I have a 97% voting record in the Congress, consistently proven my ability to reach across the aisle and get things done. And think about what's at stake in this election. The Supreme Court hangs in the balance, right? The majority in the U.S. Senate. There's way too much at stake right now to have a missing senator. We've got to do more. I'm asking for all of your vote. I'm asking for your support. And if elected to the U.S. Senate, I will be the hardest working senator this state has ever had. Thank you.
Senator.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here today and for the chance to have this debate. Thank you, Congressman Murphy. I respect very much anyone who seeks public office, especially this day and age. And I appreciate your candidacy, as I do anyone who steps forward. I do think there's a big difference. You talk about courage in politics. There's no courage in politics. Courage is people that put on the uniform of this country and are willing to die for our freedoms and our liberty. We do as public service, and we're honored to do it. I certainly am. And I'm proud of my record, and it stands in contrast to Congressman Murphy's. I've actually gotten things done. He still, an hour into this debate, has not been able to cite a single law or policy that became the law of this country because he had anything real to do with it. He talked about Zika. Senator Nelson himself said that he refuted the argument you just made because, in fact, in May, the United States Senate passed Zika funding, and I was instrumental in achieving that, as Senator Nelson pointed to in front of the press when I was attacked. And I'll tell you why this is so important. I know that this is an ugly campaign, not ours in particular, but in general. I know this has been a difficult year, especially for young people that are voting for the first time. But here's what I want you to know. We're going to be okay. We're the greatest country in the history of mankind. And we'll go through this election and we'll turn it around. And I believe America's greatest days lie ahead.
I am so grateful to both of you for being here tonight, leaving me a whole 15 seconds to thank you both so much for your service and thank our audience. All over Florida and across the nation, as well as our studio audience here at Broward College. I'm Todd McDermott. Thank you for being part of Democracy. Good night.